Thank you, Rob. Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's time for Industry Night, our weekly segment that talks food and hospitality. Last week, Chef Marcel Valladolid was in from the Food Network. The week before that, Jimmy Banas Jr. is talking breakfast. Tonight, we have a twofer. Later in the hour, we'll talk Filipino barbecue with Chef Joaquin Soler, who announced this week that his popular restaurant Smalls in Albany Park would be closing permanently. But first, let's talk mezcal. The smoky cousin to tequila has become all the rage in the world of cocktails, and a new bar in Logan Square has taken it to the next level, celebrating the agave plant, the liquor with the whole bar dedicated to it. Quixote is a mezcal bar and cafe that also serves lunch, brunch, and dinner. The restaurant is named on all sorts of best of 2017 lists. Congratulations, guys. And also, they really brought the distinct flavors of Mexico through mezcal to the Chicago area. In studio tonight, Paul Biasco and Dan Sauls. Guys, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us, Justin.
So let's talk. Let's start with, because I have so many questions about your former lives. You know, you ran a food truck. You were in journalism. So I want to get to that. But let's talk mezcal. Am I wrong in saying this is sort of like all the rage? I feel like we've seen almost in a way, and I don't want to generalize, but like tequila kind of take a back seat and mezcal sort of become the new drink or a liquor of choice.
Sure. It's definitely taken off. There's tons of signs. It's being brought to the market differently. Certain companies are starting to align themselves with mezcal now, but it's something we've both loved for a really long time. So we're not really trying to follow any trends there, but we've gone down to Mexico. We've seen it made. And what's really cool about mezcal is that the difference from tequila, that it's always steamed and generally made in a commercialized fashion. Mezcal and certainly ones that we have are all very handcrafted, 100% agave spirits, made without machines, without factories, just guys. I mean, Paul's been down there and he was raking agave in front of a horse.
All right, back us up. I mean, where does mezcal come from? I mentioned the agave plant. Explain where mezcal comes from.
Absolutely. So I think you know, why you're asking why it took off so much is because, you know, this farm to table and people want to know where their food's coming from, literally down to the, you know, the area. And mezcal specifically on each bottle, they'll tell you down to the single person who made it. So similar to tequila, it's made from an agave plant, but tequila, it's made from all the same kind of agave, a Blue Weber, but mezcal is made from 30 different kinds. So when you're getting a bottle, it's almost like wine, you know. You know the type of agave that you're drinking, but more importantly, it'll tell you the village where it came from, and that gives it a ton of the flavor, like terroir. So a lot of the beverage industry, they're talking about mezcal the same way you're almost talking about wine. You know, you're talking about the variety, you're talking about the terroir, you're talking about the maker. And we're really focused on, you know, highlighting all of those three things in the mezcals that we carry. So, you know, all of our bartenders are extremely knowledgeable on this. We have the makers in. Last week we had Aziz Cortez in, who's possibly one of the best mezcal makers in the world, hanging out with our staff, doing some training.
Great, yeah.
So we're really, you know, happy to be able to connect people to the actual producer.
Is there a real sort of, obviously, the way you both explain it, there's an independent spirit that comes to making mezcal. It's not something that, I mean, it can be mass produced, and it is, I'm sure, if you go to the grocery stores and what have you. But there's something special about it that, like you said, is kind of akin to wine.
They all tell a story. Paul alluded to one of the brands that we carry, El Holgorio and Nuestra Soledad. And it's six generations of family members all over different towns in Oaxaca making mezcal. And you can, you know, sometimes mezcals are labeled by region or sometimes by the varietal of the agave itself. And what's really cool is if El Holgorio has an Espadin, which is a more common style of mezcal, the next batch that we buy will be made from his uncle, but the one before that was his grandfather.
Oh.
And it tells these different stories.
That's awesome. It gives me goosebumps every time. Now, I mean, as I said, for the flavoring, I mean, it does come across as sort of a smoky, I guess I kind of said it as the simplest way possible, a cousin to tequila.
We hear smoky tequila a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, it's in that family, of course, because of the plant, but the smoke is definitely a part of the flavor.
Yeah, I would say that's a good starting point for a lot of people. And some of the more mass-produced mezcales, do have more smoke, but we carry a lot of really small batch stuff that you'd be really surprised doesn't have a huge overriding smoke to it.
Where does that smoke come from then? Why is it in more mass-produced stuff than the independent stuff?
They're roasted over wood. What they do is they get wood from whatever region, whatever they can get. There's different styles, and they'll catch it on fire, and they'll heat up rocks and coals. And then they'll get a bed of very hot rocks. They'll throw all the agave pinas, the hearts of them, into that, and then they'll cover it. And that'll roast it slowly over a couple days.
Okay. Yeah, 3 to 5 days. So that's where you pick up a lot of the smoke. But some of the mezcal that we're talking about, you're going to get vegetal notes. You're going to get minerality. You're going to get salinity. A lot of it's based on, like, the soil or the clay where it's growing in. That's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, and even down to what sort of plants are growing near the open-air fermenters, whether it was fermented in log or distilled in clay. I mean, it's insane. And we have a book at Quixote that circulates definitely downstairs that Paul and part of his journalism background helped publish. We have this great book that categorizes every mezcal that we have down to the species, what it was distilled in, what it was fermented in, the name of the mezcalero or mezcalera, the ABV, the town, everything.
If I'm coming into Quixote, am I prepared? Should I prepare myself for flights? Should I prepare myself for sampling? How do you when you're running a mezcal bar and cafe, and there's so many different varietals that you guys are presenting? What's the best way to do that?
It comes down to the knowledge of our staff. I mean, we train for months before we ever open. We constantly train. We had Aziz in last week. We've had other makers in. It's constant training. It's a lot of tasting. So there's some perks to the job. We do offer flights. No doubt. We change them all the time. Whether they're grouped by espadines or whether they're grouped by a certain style of distillation or similar, pairings or the delineation of flavors. But we also just, you can ask about anyone. We have different mezcals upstairs, downstairs. We sell them out the door. So we've got, like, lots of different ways to get mezcal or in a cocktail.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, if you want to be an expert, you want to come in and nerd out, like, you can definitely do that down to the craziest tasting note. But we don't want it to be like, you're coming into a library, you're scared, you're intimidated. Like, it's an open thing. Our bartenders are super cool. You may know nothing about it, and, like, we love that. One of the coolest things, I think, is that we have a to-go license. So, you like something behind the bar, you're pretty much, one of only one or two shops in the whole city, maybe the Midwest, that carry these bottles. So you can leave with something, which I think is really cool.
Wow, that's great. Quixote is the Mezcal Bar and Cafe in Logan Square. Paul Biasco and Dan Sahl's in studio tonight. We're talking mezcal. Before I let you guys go, I mean, you both have had different careers before mezcal. Of course, Paul, you referenced your background in journalism. Mm-hmm. You were at DNA Info for a long time. People know your byline. What happened? I mean, what's the shift? You got out of writing stories about politics in the neighborhoods?
I know.
And got into booze, huh?
I love DNA Info. I used to work at the Daily Herald covering crime, and I went to DNA Info doing the neighborhood thing. All the while, Dan, I was kind of helping him in the background on a lot of things, and we were always, kind of shooting around this idea of doing a big project, and he finally convinced me over, like, a 6-year period.
Yeah, caught him in a weak point. Caught him at a low point. I was just finishing up my tenure with the garage and the salsa truck, and
so you had been in other restaurants, but you also had a popular food truck, the salsa food truck.
Yeah.
So talk about it. Has it always been, owning and operating a food truck is the dream to have a brick and mortar space, or is it not work that way?
It totally depends. Mine was definitely a means to an end. I was, my foot in the door. I was completely willing. I always wanted to be in restaurants. I wanted to be a chef for whatever that's worth and go from there. But and I was always willing to, like, if I had to start at, start as a dishwasher and work my way up and do that kind of stuff. But fortunately, the city of Chicago was changing laws. I actually, right after college, was a stockbroker and didn't like it. And right when it seemed like the city was starting to allow food trucks, I just got caught by the bug.
What's the difference? I mean, for you to be in a cafe and a bar with
lunch, brunch, food, and also mezcal. I mean, what's the big challenge or what's the big difference between operating a food truck and being in the restaurant business?
Well, I'd say operating a food truck was the single hardest experience of my life, especially doing it by myself. I had great friends and staff and people to help, but taking all of that on, being a self-proprietor, definitely prepared me for the restaurant. I'm crazy. I like to work a lot. So that definitely plays into it. But, I mean, we have a huge staff. We have different menus. We open early in the morning. Then we have lunch. Then we transition to dinner. We have a downstairs bar. We have late-night food. We've got a patio. There's a lot going on.
That's a lot. Yeah, right.
Different menus, lots of staff. Managing staff is
do you find? Yeah, I was going to say, that's the two things. I mean, management, but you also find yourself – is the time different? I mean, is the idea that now that you're in this space, this brick-and-mortar space, I mean, you were with the garage as well, but do you find that more time that you spend in the space than you did with the truck?
Yeah, because this one's 7 days. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, we open at 9 a.m. every day, and it goes till 2 or 3, so
it's a lot of time.
Now, I make the transition to journalism. I mean, you'll be following stories and running deadlines, but your hours aren't usually that crazy.
No, but I will say, like, journalism's kind of a 24/7 job because even if I'm not working, I'm pretty much on the internet reading, like, what's going on in the city. I'm on Twitter all the time. I'm nuts. I'll hear an ambulance go by and I'll flip on my scanner still, even now. So it's kind of the same, you know. I'm checking emails. I'm doing this. If I'm not at the restaurant, pretty much just thinking about it at every moment. So in that sense, it's the same.
Yeah, we really like. Being independent and working for ourselves is a huge part of it. Like, we asked for this. We have nothing to complain about the hard hours or anything like that. It's, I mean, one day I think we'd both like to retire in Mexico or something like that. But it's a long ways away. So we're young and dumb. And just,
Paul, what
you know,
was it?
Baby.
I mean, I asked Dan this question about the challenges and the differences. You know, when you talk about journalism, I mean, obviously time was a mm-hmm. big part of it, but how different is the restaurant business to telling stories of crime and whatever specific beat you're on?
I would say the things that I think it prepared me to do were just work with people. They're both jobs where you're going to encounter 20 different people in a day, all kinds of people. I used to walk into someone's home after a crime. I used to interview a politician. I used to interview a new business owner. And you kind of need to be able to handle all of those situations and kind of relate to all those people. And through journalism, I think you really learn how to do that, no matter how old they are, young they are, et cetera. And the same thing happens at the restaurant. You know, I'm there every dinner. People come in the front door. I meet 30, 40 people every night. And the coolest thing is, you know, we got a ton of regulars already. Know most of them by name, you know. I know where they
Paul's
like.
Paul's a man of the people.
It's the same thing. It's funny. I tell people, I'm like, it's the exact same thing.
He's a legend in Logan Square.
No.
What's the address?
2456 North California Avenue, Chicago.
2456 North California. Quixote is the restaurant, mezcal bar and cafe, with lunch, brunch, and dinner. You can find that if you search Quixote, you get. All the best lists, best restaurants, things like that for 2017. Paul Biasco, Dan Sahls in studio talking mezcal, but also their transition from one area to the next. Guys, thanks so much for being here, and congrats on your success.
Thank you so much.